Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/AllAboutAndroid. That's LYNDA.com/AllAboutAndroid. And by LegalZoom, if you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC, get a trademark, and more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code AAA in the referral box at checkout this month for your special discount. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used HTC and other Android devices are worth at Gazelle.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 221, recorded on Tuesday, July 7th, 2015. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
And just go ahead and
Gina
do it.
Patty.
Yeah.
Right on. It's good to have you back. Gina, how you been?
Great to be here. Doing great. Great, great, great.
Great, great, great indeed. You great?
I'm great.
Okay. I'm pretty great. I'm okay,
yeah.
Great.
It's even, we're all back together. It's the three of us. It's just like old times.
Just like old times once again. And Gina, I'm so thrilled to have you back here. You were on This Week in Google last week. You're on This Week in Google next week because I'm hosting This Week in Google. So you are being very gracious with your time and I totally appreciate it because having you on This Week in Google in particular, when I'm hosting it, is a real big relief for me because I know you won't let me get into too much trouble.
Well, Leo's on vacation. I wanted to pitch in a little bit. No, I'm glad. I'm thrilled to be here. I love being on the show. So right, I'm excited. We got some good news tonight, too.
We do. We do indeed. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to be discussing Google's new ride sharing app.
Ooh. Which is a little more clickbaity headline than
it's true.
Yeah, it's true, but we'll get into it.
All right. Material Design Lite. Yep. For the internet, for the web, rather. Samsung's continuing profit decline. The Turing phone. It's kind of an interesting device. The Pebble Time, which I've got on my wrist right here. And more. But why don't we do it? Zach, by the way, Zach is filling in for Brian this week.
Brian,
welcome back to the show, Zach.
Abandoned us once again.
Once again. That means that all the pressure of the world is on Zach's shoulders as we jump to the news.
Oh,
it's okay.
Listen, Zach, I know it's difficult back there, but when you're on the TD, you press play, and that starts the animation.
Oh, so. This button.
He's never operated a TriCaster
a day
before,
of my life.
So he right. doesn't know, Zach. I've got your back.
Okay, here we go.
With Cranky Hippo out again, Eskimo Zach will give the show a spin.
Oh,
on Android News.
Oh, and not only did you do, okay, I, by the way, as a fellow TriCaster operator, I know how difficult that was to rotate that and then have it snap into place at the end. That's really impressive.
Now, if he had just hit his cue, it would have been that much more impressive.
Oh, man. Come on, we got to go easy on Zach. Come on.
I think in light of the first kind of road bump,
sure, yes.
A speed bump, Zach did a wonderful job.
I really liked it. It was good, Zach. You gave it your own spin. You gave it your own. Yeah,
and it rhymed.
And it rhymed.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'm also the editor for this show, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Most people have no idea because Zach removed it by now. So there we go. So Gina, what better way to welcome you back to the show than to give you the top headline this week?
Top headline. I'm honored. This is really cool, actually. I'm kind of excited about it. So yesterday, Google announced a new thing, Material Design Lite. This is basically gives web developers the CSS and the HTML, JavaScript to make web apps or web pages. They don't even really have to be apps. Material design, you know, look and feel, the floating action buttons, the hamburger menu, all the interactions. This is unlike Polymer, which is Google's which is a more interactive back-end, front-end focused framework. This Material Design Lite is just the front-end. So it's framework agnostic. It can work with any code that you've already got running. If you got a web page, you can use this. And gzipped package comes in under 27 kilobytes. And the code is on GitHub and at getmdl.io, MDL for Material Design Lite. And I love this idea and I'm excited about it. And I'm actually trying to looking through all my websites, seeing which ones I can I could use this for, because I mean, if you can make an HTML page, if you know any HTML at all, like using Material Design Lite is not that much of a leap. It's all this prefab kind of CSS that will, you know, turn your button into a floating round button with the interactions of Material Design. And, you know, you could use it for a blog, you use it for, you know, just something as a simple kind of one page or marketing page and with any language. So it looks really neat. I like to say I love that, and it's totally responsive too. So it does all the things that Material does on a big screen, a big wide screen, it looks good, small screen, tablet. And I feel like for aspiring developers in particular, like if you wanted to quickly kind of prototype out what should my Android app look like, you could do it with just some flat, you know, HTML pages using this. So I think it's pretty cool. Have you guys looked at this at all? Or
oh yeah, I was all over because
like right up your alley. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was published on Medium, which was my app in the arena last week. So if you haven't voted, by the way, there's still time. I was all over it when I saw this came up, which I thought was interesting that Google developers setting up a channel and posting stuff directly to Medium, which is a whole other kind of aside kind of conversation. But reading through it, I thought it was great to see it, you know, written in such a way that is easy to absorb even for a non-developer who's interested in design and that sort of thing, but get enough to the technical side of things to get, you know, to the point where I'm like, ooh, I want to try this if I can find the time to actually play with this. And I think the rapid prototyping idea, Gina, that you mentioned is a great idea because you probably run into way more people who are familiar with HTML and CSS than with Java or whatever you're doing for Android, you know, to do straight up to Android coding. So that's a great, you know, to work with a developer who knows HTML, CSS and say, here, learn this, and this will be one step closer to doing material design for the app is great. So,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
I think this is awesome. I think it's great to get these tools into people's hands and to enable people to the ability to do this if they want to in an easier way. What I wonder, though, maybe this is just me being a little cynical. But
no, let's hear the other side.
But material design works for me on Android because I feel like it's Google's approach. It's Google's modern approach to Android, right? That's kind of what it was born out of. And you know, sure, it was material design was always intended to be this thing that spreads out beyond just Android and, you know, also Google's own sites and, you know, onto the web with Polymer and all this kind of stuff. I find myself having a little bit, like, I realize not every single site in the world is going to update to material design. Sure. But for some reason, it just seems weird bringing material design to the web beyond just like Google/Android related things.
And I'm sorry, Gina, if you probably say this much better than I could, but it's a design methodology. It's a design approach. It's not an Android.
But in my
brain,
it's so associated.
Well, sure, yeah, yeah.
That it's hard for me to like erase that. I'm like, why is your site in material design? I don't get it.
Well, I mean, but if you look at what Google's doing, all of Google's sites are material design.
Yeah, no,
the
that
IO
makes
site
sense
was
to
material
me.
Design.
That makes perfect sense.
The Google Music update, which some people were complaining, but I think that's just because people don't like change. I love the new Google Music site. I think it's great.
I do too.
Although I really wish they would let me add a photo for bands because some bands they know and they can pull a background photo in, but then other bands, and I listen to a lot of, you know, obscure or small indie bands that they might not have heard of, but I have photos of them. I can upload them. That's a little complaint.
I don't mean to sound like I'm complaining because I love material design.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, are a lot of sites like jumping at the chance to material design their sites that
well, here's,
I
mean, a practical question.
I guess they are if they have anything to do with, you know, like if they're fans of Google or fans of Android or whatever. That, like, totally makes sense to me. But why would anyone else do it?
Well, Gina, are you going to redesign ThinkUp.com to be material design?
Well, it's so funny. I was having this conversation with my co-founder today because he was like, oh, this is great. So we use Bootstrap, which is basically the Twitter equivalent of Material Design Lite. Bootstrap has been out for many, many more years. It went open source. It's had hundreds of contributors. And it's basically built for, like, when you're a coder, you're often building these like back-end tools that your users aren't seeing. It's just kind of an internal thing, and you just need to slap together a form, you know, that just accepts some inputs. You know, I imagine Twit has a lot of these kind of internal tools like this. And Bootstrap is just a way to like, hey, here's make your internal dashboard or your, you know, content management system look a little bit nicer. So you're not using the web browser defaults, which a lot of web developers who are not designers will use. So we rely a lot on Bootstrap. And I was talking to my co-founder, I was like, you know, Material is so great. Like, you know, if it's as good as Bootstrap, you know, I would definitely consider moving over to it. And, you know, he was like, well, it's really new. Let's see how, you know, much it's maintained and how long, you know, what kind of life it has, whether or not Google's really behind it. And, you know, when we did have this question of like, do I know of any other web apps besides Google Apps? I use Inbox, Google Inbox in the browser. So I am using Material, kind of Google Keep. Yeah. Those are, I think my two main apps that use Material, but they're Google apps. Like, I don't know. I don't think that I've used a non-native Android app, a web app that's Material based mm-hmm. on Polymer that, you know, that hasn't been Google. So maybe this is the reason why Material Design Lite is happening. Maybe this is Google's like, hey, we want to get this design system. We want to, you know, kind of get this out there and have it not dependent on our other technologies. But I, you know, our decision anyway for ThinkUp was kind of like, all right, we're going to wait and see, you know, if this sticks around and gets developed at the pace that Bootstrap did. But I loved Bootstrap. It saved a ton of time, a ton of design time. And you honestly can customize it too. And I imagine you can do the same with Material, with MDL. So we'll see, but it took a long time to get there. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, I'm curious what sites, I mean, I'm looking, I just did a quick search for what sites are using Material Design. And I don't think that many are, because a lot of them are Google sites. I mean, right. You know, like outside of Google. And maybe this is the first step. I'm looking, there's a blog called materialdesignblog.com.
That doesn't make any sense. Why don't you just tell us what you write about? Seriously.
But it looks like they're using it, but to a certain, yeah, they totally
no,
are
they
using
are totally
it.
Using
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally
yeah,
using material it. Design. So I wonder how they did that. But it's really nice, actually.
Oh, there,
but
there it,
but that makes sense, right?
Right.
Because it's a site about material design.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think what it comes around to is, and this was a fear that I had early on when Material Design was introduced and we started to see it on Android. And thankfully, that fear has kind of been put to bed a little bit. But I find myself having it again here, which is just like doing material design, but still having some sort of personal identity or some sort of identifiable.
So are you
characteristic?
You're
you know
lumping
I mean?
Material design in with Google's brand identity.
I totally am.
And
yes.
So therefore, so if I'm going to make where in the world is crankyhippo.com, and it's a great new site where you can track Cranky Hippo around the world and find out what Brian Burnett is up to, right? And if I did it all material design and had nothing to do with Google and never even did anything with Google, would you then see that site and think, oh, it's a Google site?
You know what I would think? I think I would see it, and oh man, I feel like I'm going to get some hate for this, but I'd feel like to some degree it would be kind of like a templatized, kind of like a lazy approach to creating your site. Not lazy, and I know that sounds bad, but what I mean is like you sign up for WordPress or you sign up for, you know, whatever site, and they have templates, and you can go with the template that they give you. And I feel like Material Design is like a template, right? And that's exactly what it is. They're giving you tools to do it, but I feel like if that's all you're doing, well, then everybody can do it, and there will be a million sites that look identical to each other, and they're all going to be material design sites, and they aren't going to have character because they all have the same character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's tough. Yeah.
Personalizing it beyond that, I think, is kind of important. And how do you do that on a website? It's possible.
I mean, it actually reminds me of a sociological conversation, which I was just reading about. I just read a book about the New York hardcore scene in the 80s because that's the music that I like. Mm-hmm. And they talked about how it reached a point in the late 1980s where everybody was dressing the same. And it took a bunch of people to say, wait a minute, we're punk rock, we're hardcore, we're different than everyone, and we shun everyone else, but here we are all falling in line with a look, and aren't we just doing what we're trying to rebel against, you know? And so it becomes that kind of thing where just because once you accept something and it becomes homogenizing, and then you lose any lack of personality or rebellion or spirit of change because it's setting up restrictions or barriers around what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Maybe it's not a world where the entire web is supposed to be material design, but it could be.
And it's a good starting point. And maybe that's the point.
I mean, I think part of it is like material design maturing to the point where it's customizable enough that it isn't automatically recognizable. Like Bootstrap had this problem in the beginning where you could immediately tell if a site was a Bootstrap site, right? But as more people adopted it, more developers pushed the boundaries of what can be customized and wanted to make it their own, right? They wanted all the benefits without the telltale, you know, button, you know, showing what it is. And I feel like if MDL can get to that point, although, you know, Google, one of Google's reasons, you know, people said that there are a bunch of material ports for Bootstrap. So their material design that the community did, that Google didn't do specifically. But Google said, you know, we did MDL because, you know, while the community has done a great job, you know, they didn't always implement things exactly the way that we would have in material. So we really wanted to show our kind of guiding hand. I mean, Google's really taking a lot more. They kind of, so the pendulum swung the other way. They're taking a very strong leadership role in material design. I think that this is their push toward becoming the design company and showing like this is the way that it should be. And at this early stage, this just dropped yesterday, I don't think it's very flexible. But if it gets the adoption, I think that it will become more customizable. My issue is more like material design is just so touch optimized. Like so many of the interactions, the way the buttons react and the sliding, it's very touchscreen optimized. And I spend most of my day on a desktop, you know. I still get surprised in inbox when I like tap the compose button and that menu flies out. And that's just, I guess, just me just sort of getting used to the system. But, and I get we want everything to work the same across touchscreen and desktop and big screen and small screen. But I think sometimes it does feel like, oh, this is a native mobile app. I still have that divide kind of in my mind.
Yep. All right, cool. So that is material design.
I feel like we could spend a lot of time on material design.
Yeah,
So I'm going to play with it. I'm going to try it. I mean, I've been, as Gina knows, I've been tinkering around with some side projects and things like that. I'm going to play with this. I'm going to see if I can get it to work. So for my Where is the World? It's crankyhippo.com.
Make it happen. It's going to be the most popular website of the second.
I hope so.
A study by some Italian researchers, academics, analyzed data from the top 1,000 apps in the iOS App Store and on Google Play for Android, and concluded that Android apps on Google Play are updated roughly every 28 days versus every 59 days for iOS, basically twice as much. Download and user figures were also nearly double on Google Play what they were on iOS, and the top 1,000 apps on Play were older than the top 1,000 on iOS, and that kind of hints at, you know, like a higher turnover rate for those popular apps. I just found this kind of interesting because I do see, you know, we see all of our updates front and center all the time. Like the Nexus 5 that I use for the shows here, like I keep it, you know, powered down and I don't use it over the weekend. Then I come in on Monday and turn it on and it's like, you can't use that sucker for 10 minutes because it's like, isn't it? Why are there so many updates on Android? Is it that developers are over developing, or is it just support for the many different devices?
I know why.
Differentiation.
Do you know why? Gina, do you know why?
I think I know why.
Is it because there's no Brazil-esque bureaucracy around approving apps and updates?
That's probably part of the reason.
Yeah. Right?
It's definitely part of it. Yeah. So I think so there's the practical concern of like you save up all your iOS updates for that one big drop because you know you're going to have to wait for the review, you know, for the approval or not. Mm-hmm. But this is also just like a cultural difference between like sort of the Apple sphere and the Google sphere, right? Like in the Google sphere, you release early alphas, betas, ugly previews, and you iterate, warts and all, right? And you iterate in public. Whereas kind of like in the Apple sphere, you get it perfect and complete and utter secrecy, and then you do this big splashy release. And I think that developers kind of internalize that, especially around the approval times for the App Store. I think there's a fear, like, oh, it's not going to get approved, or, you know, let's just save up all these changes for that one big drop. And I think in the Play Store, you know, as a developer, you upload it, it's going to be there in a few hours. It's just a matter of time for it to propagate. Mm-hmm. I think it's just those two differences of, you know, iterate in public and small changes more often versus bigger version drops.
Which I'd rather see. I mean, I can't tell you the
number. That was my next question.
Yeah, the number of times I've noticed that an app was updating, I used it, went to do something and get the app fail and go back to the home screen and like, and then the next day see an update and remember I had that problem, go back and try the thing I did and it works now.
So, but yeah. I now, mind you, I've never used an iOS device in my life except for at the TD desk to switch video inputs.
How dare you?
I know. I'm so clueless. I'm actually so clueless when it comes to iOS. But so let's say you release a version of the app that then you discover that happens.
Yeah.
How quickly can you turn around and update? Like, you can't do that in 24 hours?
Oh, you
or you can.
I think you probably could, right? I don't know if there's limits on how could you release an update concurrently immediately. I don't. Yeah, but.
But I mean, but that's the same thing that we're talking about here, though, right? Is that Android users can release an update.
No, iOS can't, because every time you submit an app for an update to the iOS store, uh-huh. every time you submit an app or an update, it needs to get reviewed as if it's the first time it's ever been submitted.
Yeah, it gets reviewed.
So you couldn't do an immediate change.
You could not do an immediate change. You could not. Yeah, you could take the app down. Like, okay. if you had a critical problem, your only recourse is to take the app down.
Okay.
And then until you can get the update approved. Trust me, I know, because I've been through this at jobs and stuff like that, where we had iOS apps.
I knew that you guys would know this.
And it's mind-boggling when you're like, oh my God, please just update it. Like, this is exactly what the fix was, or what will happen on the Apple side. And I don't want to go off on bashing Apple or whatever, but you'll have a small update, submit it to the app review. They will reject it, but for nothing related to what you changed, for something previously that they never talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're
like,
never caught.
You approved that. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All right. So having that control in the developer's hands is better,
yes.
What you guys are saying, okay?
Well, I mean, cool.
I mean, is there update abuse? Is there such a thing? Developers is like, I'll push out an update. And I added a space in that little area right there on the screen.
I mean, doing an update is annoying. I mean, as a developer, like, it's annoying. You have to change all your version numbers. You have to package it up. You have to do the change log. You have to submit this big long form. If it's a security change, there are ways to fast track it. Like in the App Store, you can be like, this is a critical security bug or whatever. There are flags, or you can say to them, hey, you guys, we really need your attention. You never know if it's going to get that attention. But it's not like a fun or easy thing. I mean, I certainly, like, updating websites is easier, you know, if you have the right push scripts or whatever. I don't think it's abuse. I think what happens is a developer puts out an Android app and then they stare at their developer console. And every time that there's an app crash, they get a line in their log and they go, oh, crap. Right. And then they find the bug and they fix the bug and then they push it out. You know what I mean? Because you get live kind of crash reports and force closes, you know, information in the Play Store. So I think it's just a developer paying attention and being responsive. I think it's actually the opposite of being abusive or overusing it.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's better for the community.
I'm just like devil's advocate today.
I know you are devil's advocate.
I know, I like it.
Well, let's see you be devil's advocate about some financials.
Okay.
It's hard to be devil's advocate about some numbers. We've been tracking and talking about Samsung kind of losing their edge. See what I did there?
Oh,
but not really seeing the meteoric growth that they saw over a year ago. And sure enough, the latest numbers are claiming that. Samsung Galaxy S6 and Edge aren't doing well enough to reverse Samsung's trend of profit decline. This is the seventh straight quarter that Samsung saw a drop in profits, though the company didn't break down the earnings by business units. A big problem is Samsung's miscalculation of how many S6s versus S6 Edges would be produced, resulting in too many S6s and not enough Edges, according to the infamous person familiar with the matter.
Ah, yes, that person.
So, so the question is Samsung, like, is this the inevitable decline after a success?
Well, I don't know. This sounds like they really didn't expect the Edge to be as popular as it was.
I think that's
they expected the vanilla version to be, you know, and the white S6, by the way, is supposedly what they're overstocked with.
Yep.
I don't know, you know, how much a correction in that in advance would have kind of helped their position.
Yeah,
I have a hard time believing that the S6 hasn't sold well.
No, I think it's sold better than they thought. Yeah. I think they haven't had enough.
They really forecast incorrectly.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. The Edges sold well. They haven't had enough edges. They've had too many S6s. It's probably sold well, but if they're seeing a dip in profits, this is every time this has come up for the past half a year. I've said where, you know, people are wondering if Samsung is going down, if whatever. But they sold so many phones once they had a hit with the S5. There's only so many people out there. We go through this the first billion, and now we're under the second billion. You know. People need time to want to get a new phone or to be able to afford to get a new phone. You can't expect them at the rate that they're releasing these new phones, which is less than a year now. You can't expect them to, you know, to see everybody upgrade instantly and have that same kind of numbers. They plateaued, and now their goal is to keep that user base and kind of slowly grow.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not using it. They're not monitoring the units and users. They're monitoring the profits, which is now biting them in the butt. So, but I guess that's what shareholders care about, profits. So. Mm-hmm. They should come out with a smaller phone, come out with a different product as opposed to the iteration on the set. That's why the Edge is doing well, because it's an iteration, but it's a different product. It's a different type of thing.
It just absolutely looks different, but not in a bad way either. Yeah. You know, it looks different and it's kind of an attractive device. So, yeah.
I wouldn't have called the Edge a success. I mean, I think it's interesting that Edge was so successful. I think I sat on this show and was just like, that's stupid.
have you held one though?
I haven't. I've seen one in person, but I haven't. I didn't ask. It was a stranger, so I didn't ask to hold it. But it was like close up on the subway, and I was kind of like, oh, that's really cool looking. It caught my eye. Yeah.
I would be very curious. And I don't even know how you tell this, but very curious to know of all the Edge, the people that have bought an Edge. Did they buy it for the functionality, or did they buy it because it looks different?
Right.
Do they even use the side edge stuff?
Right. I would say
I'm very curious to know that.
I think the side edge stuff is useless. I'm with Gina and on it, in that the side, like being able to get the small strip of text on the side is stupid, but it looks different. When we saw it with one edge side, we thought it was idiotic. When you saw it with both edge sides, you're like, oh, wow,
I want more sense. Yeah, absolutely.
True.
Well, in other Samsung news, or additional Samsung news, the Shanghai Consumer Rights Protection Commission is suing Samsung and Oppo for overbloating their phones with non-removable software that drives up data costs and eats up disk space. The Galaxy Note 3 had 44 apps installed out of the box, and the Oppo Find 7A had 71 apps installed.
My goodness.
So it's nice to see that Shanghai Consumer Rights Protection Commission is cracking down on this. I wish our Consumer Rights Commission would do that if we had. Do we have one? The FTC.
I mean, you know, but a lot of this comes down to the price that you get it for subsidized, right? Like it's because of the subsidies. It's kind of the deal you make with the devil, I suppose.
Yeah. Well,
having said that,
Samsung
it really
gloats.
Sucks to get a phone and have more than half of the disk space eaten up by these apps that you're not going to use and you can't remove them.
Wasn't it the S5? Didn't the S5 had out of the 16 gig model? Wasn't 12 of it?
Yes, it was. It was the S5, I think.
Some percentage where it's got to be less than half, or you know, like you can't advertise a phone with 16 gig of memory if only 4 is available.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Let's see here. Gina, we got an email, and I think maybe you'd have some insight on this.
Yes, I do. We do have an email. It is from Kevin Jenkins. Kevin writes, Dear AAA crew, in last week's show, you talked about Google trying to move developers off Eclipse and onto Android Studio. I'm about to encourage my kids to learn how to code for Android, and the plan was to get them to do some of the excellent Udacity courses online over their summer holidays. However, all these courses are built around using Eclipse. Do you know if Google has any plans to update the Udacity courses so that they are based on Android Studio? Well, Kevin Jenkins, you are in luck. It looks like the latest Udacity courses are built for Android are based around Android Studio, including the free ones like Android Development for Beginners. If you look at the course summary, you'll see that it is built around Android Studio. They must have changed this actually pretty recently.
Yeah, it's called out as a new course. I bet they did some sort of an update to this, and of which it makes perfect sense if they're phasing out Eclipse that they would do that. This is all done by Google.
Yeah, this is Udacity. We will use Android Studio to build our apps. You should have access to a computer that can run Android Studio in order to follow along. I think I'm actually going to take that nano degree. I've been thinking about it a lot, and actually enrollment opens up tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And so I was running through some of that because, you know, like I've developed on Android, but my knowledge is kind of piecemeal, and I had lots of help from sort of volunteer developers, so I kind of want to do something structured. And so I was reading the prereqs and stuff, and Android Studio was one of the prerequisites, and I went to install Android Studio on my machine, and I had installed a really early alpha version, and the install would just fail in the middle. But I wound up, you know, working through the Udacity instructions, which was just a free here's how to install Android Studio, and I figured it out, like using the like little videos and step by step. So I have to say, I'm really impressed with Udacity. So I'm going to see how I do. It's a big commitment, so I'm a little scared, but I think I'm going to give it a try. So I'll report back.
Cool.
Next time. Very cool. Show.
And isn't it cool that like like Kevin can be like, you know, my kids are going to learn how to code over the summer using free Udacity courses. Like, that's so awesome.
That's very cool.
And I love that he's like, yeah, and I don't want them using Eclipse. They really need to be on Android Studio because that's the new stuff.
Yep, that makes perfect sense. Right. Were you, I mean, did you kind of see the writing on the wall as far as Eclipse was concerned and the announcement that Google made last week, I imagine?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's been pretty clear for a while that they were gonna move completely over to Android Studio, and now that I have installed and poked around, it's clearly better, faster. So I'm actually really excited to dig into it. So good for you, Kevin, and good luck to your kids this summer.
Yeah, Kevin's kids are so lucky. I remember in the summer being in my mother's office with a copy. I don't know what magazine. It might have been Omni, or it might have been it was some nerd magazine, and it had a tutorial on how to code in BASIC and like how to make a game. And I made the skiing game where the H key was the skier, and it would go down. Yeah, and it would, you know, you'd use the left and right arrows and whatever. And I remember I was just like, I was for working. I was on an Apple II Plus making it all happen. And so
I remember, so great. I remember Compute Magazine, I believe.
Yeah. It might have been Commodore Compute 64. Magazine. I don't know.
There were a couple of magazines that I had a subscription to, and you'd get them, and one of them you'd type out your programs in machine code.
Oh, jeez.
So it was literally streams of numbers.
Yeah.
And I'd do that for hours, and then you'd go to assemble it and run it, and it didn't work.
You missed one.
Crap.
But how do you debug that?
Well,
that,
cool. I mean, wall of numbers. Let's figure out the one number I missed. Or maybe it was two. Maybe it was 10 numbers. I'll never know because I'm not doing that.
It's like a couple of years later when I was like in middle school when I started hacking the games I was playing and found out that you could open up like the DAT files or whatever and use a hex editor and you could change the text in the games. Oh, so it was like, welcome to whatever. I'd say, welcome to runs. You know, like, and there was a way to find the answers to puzzles and stuff like that. Oh, God. So
the golden age.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you for sending in that email. Although you're probably going to want to listen up because while we thank our first sponsor here, I think this is also totally applicable to what you're talking about here. Lynda.com is a sponsor of All About Android, and Lynda is all about education, all about educating you in just this type of stuff. It's for problem solvers, it's for people who are curious, want to make things happen. And, you know, if you're looking to learn to develop an Android app, this is the place to go. You can master Excel or sharpen your photography skills. I mean, it covers the gamut. Lynda.com has everything you need to feed your curious mind. Some of the latest Lynda.com courses that I recommend, distributing Android apps. There's Java Essential Training for students, up and running with Arduino. You can get really, really cool. Technical and really geeky with that one. There's also a series of brand new courses on Adobe's Creative Cloud updates for 2015, including tutorials on Photoshop, Premiere Pro, Audition, After Effects, InDesign, Illustrator. Not only do they cover techniques and software and all that kind of stuff, they cover kind of broader courses, of which some of them that I've talked about in the past as far as like music production is concerned, sitting down with people who are involved in the music industry and watching how they mix and how they master their albums and how they soundproof and all that kind of stuff. I love that content. With a Lynda.com membership, you can watch and learn from top experts. They're all passionate about teaching, and it shows through their quality of delivery and through the video production is so high level. Everything just looks and sounds great. You can stream thousands of video courses on demand and learn at your own schedule, of course. Learning at your own pace, the courses are actually structured so you can watch them from start to finish. Or if you choose, you can kind of, you know, check them out in bite-sized pieces if that's easier. You can browse each course transcript, follow along, search for an answer in that transcript, and skip right to that point. You just kind of click on that part of the transcript, and it takes you right there in the video. Take notes as you go. Refer to those later. You can also download tutorials and watch those on the go, and that includes access to all this stuff on your Android or your iOS device. And you can create and save playlists of courses that you want to watch. Customize your learning path. You can also share those, you know, with your friends, your colleagues, your team members. Make everybody as smart as you. Your Lynda.com membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an expert, whether you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, definitely check out Lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And you can sign up for your free 10-day trial. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet of awesome videos. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And we thank Lynda for their continued support of this show. All right, let's talk about some interesting hardware this week.
Some very interesting hardware this week.
It's not your usual.
It's not your usual phone announcements. And, yeah, same old.
This one definitely caught my eye. Meet the Turing phone.
This is cool.
Turing Robotic Industries says it's ultra secure and stronger than steel. The metal used in the phone is made of a liquid morphium. It's a liquid metal alloy that is stronger than steel and titanium. The phone itself is also IPX8 certified. That's the highest level of protection, which means it's capable of submersion in water, not just, you know, being splashed on and stuff. A fingerprint sensor is actually built into the side of the phone. I do wonder, though, if it's a slide or if it's a press. It looks like it's probably a slide because it's such a small sensor. So that might be a little bit of a ding, but I don't know that for sure. It promises end-to-end authentication and encryption to heighten security, and it sports a quad-core Snapdragon 801, 3 gigs of RAM, a 5.5-inch high-res display, 3,000 milliamp-hour battery, and Android 5.1. There's the specs list that they don't make very easy to read. Anyways, 16 gig all the way up to 128 gig options from $610 to $870. You know, unsubsidized, of course, you'd be paying out of pocket for the whole price, but it's yours to keep. Available pre-order July 31st. Interesting. I mean, stronger than steel, stronger than titanium. Is this something every phone should have?
Well, I mean, if your Nexus 6 was made out of titanium when you got out of the car
screen,
that day.
The screen isn't made out of titanium.
True, yeah, but still.
And then
it could have absorbed the shock.
That wouldn't have saved it.
Yeah.
Possibly.
I want to give this to my kid and send her to the playground, see how it does.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, the other kids in the playground won't get into it with all the security stuff.
I know. Right?
Exactly.
Can't say I'm like too in love with the design of it.
I think it's cool. I mean, it's very minimalist.
A little too pointy. I have a feeling it's going to be an uncomfortable phone to hold.
I feel like it's very military-esque for some reason. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we're going to see these phones.
It feels like the black phone, but...
Yeah. I would expect this to be like in the next 24 series. Like they're using these phones instead of whatever phones they used. But yeah,
it looks sharp. It looks like you could cut salami with that thing.
Yeah, totally.
But the back is surprisingly colorful. Look at that. Yeah, so there you go.
A little bit of extra style.
I don't know. It's neat. I like to see different phones. I mean, it's up there with the black phone. I think it's in that category.
Yeah.
Phones that I'll never see in the wild. So.
Yeah,
I wonder who buys that. Who's the customer for that?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
wannabe spies and James Bond types.
People who work at Halliburton.
I mean, it's not the most expensive phone in the world.
Is Halliburton still in business?
It's actually fairly affordable given.
Yeah.
Specs, right?
And titanium's pretty light.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but
all right. Well, hardware giveth and hardware taketh away.
Oh.
Do you remember the Yotaphone 2?
Yeah.
That was the phone with the dual screens on the front and the back.
Miriam brought it in.
Yeah,
showed
she did.
It off.
Yeah, it was
show.
Pretty cool. The back was the one color e-paper kind of display, right? Wasn't it? Yeah, it was very very cool concept. Yeah, no more. That's gonna be the last device Yota does with Android. Yota announced. Announced that they are ditching Android for Sailfish by Hoya? Jala?
Yeah, I don't know if it's Jala or Yala.
J-O-L-L-A.
Or Hala. Could be Hala.
Hala, yeah. Former Hala. Nokia Hala. Engineers at Hoya, Hala. So Sailfish.
One of these is
one
right.
One of those will be this. Somebody please help me. So they'll be using Sailfish instead. And Sailfish beat out Samsung's Tizen for the contract with Yota. So no more Android for Yota phone. Instead, they'll be running Sailfish and not Tizen. So a little ding to Tizen.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Miriam was pretty high up on the Yota phone.
Yeah.
Tripod in the chat room, however, bought one of those. Crappy phone it was.
Wow.
Says Tripod. Crappy phone it was.
In the Yota voice.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That was good, Tripod.
bummer. But I don't know. It's cool seeing different approaches.
I thought that
was very different. The first iteration of it kind of blew chunks because they didn't have the touch screen elements on the back, and Second time they got it right.
Anytime you give me a device that looks different than the other devices that we see on a weekly basis, I'm all for it. That's why I love the pad phone and the transformer and all the things where you put the phone in the tablet and then it becomes a laptop and stuff like that. I love it. Do more like that. Do more weird stuff like that. So there you go.
Okay, let's see.
The hardware equivalent of Ron's app picks.
Yeah.
And then there's BlackBerry.
Yes, Ev Leaks, who was supposed to be retired, but you can't you can't keep the guy away from his leaks.
Yeah, he must not be because he keeps coming out with leaks. So
yeah, I think he's just got a good source. On Twitter, he posted a possible render of an upcoming BlackBerry device running Android, sporting a curved display and a slide out keyboard underneath. We got to put this up on the green screen. I could not figure out. Where is the slide-out keyboard? So this is a split screen, yeah? And where does the keyboard slide out from? It's a beautiful, it's a good-looking phone,
Is it underneath
actually.
The screen? Does the screen slide up and it's above that speaker?
It must be, right?
It's got to
be. The
screen
must slide up. So there's an image a little lower on the page, Zach, that shows sort of like half, it's like half with the keyboard. It's right next, yeah.
Is it a slider? Do the slider.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, the slider.
Yeah, there
okay,
it is.
Okay.
There it is.
Oh, there
yeah.
it is. Right.
So
okay, so there it is. So it slides up there.
That's a big old phone. Look at that.
Yeah. Yes.
It's got a badunkadunk.
It's got a badunkadunk. BlackBerry's gasp of air trying to get on the Android bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went on the record years ago before Android when I had an HTC Windows phone, and I swore I would never buy a phone that didn't have a physical keyboard. And then the Nexus One came out and made me eat my lunch. And I've never had one since. So I would be open to it. If it's a decent enough phone and it works well enough, I feel like a lot of the typos and things like I make are made because of my big old dumb fingers on the small keyboard. And I feel like a physical keyboard would solve that. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I'm slightly distracted because, Zach, I hope you have the breaking news bumper at the ready, and if you're not, I'll just...
This is Zach's true test.
I'll just tap dance a little bit, but we may have some breaking news. That'll work.
That's the old school breaking news. News. There we go. That's not lollipop related, so it makes sense.
It's okay. That's true.
Breaking news.
Let's see who in chat passed this along. B. Geising tells us that we spoke too soon. Apparently, the Yoda phone might in fact be dedicated to Android. So
or partially dedicated.
Yeah,
to Android.
Partially.
It's so open to seeing other operating
Yoda
systems.
Phone officially denies the rumor. However, apparently confirms that there is a version of the Yoda phone floating around with Sailfish powering it. So it's like a rumor that's based in.
In some
sort
fact.
Of
well,
fact.
Well, no, because it's one thing to say we're ditching Android for Sailfish versus we got Sailfish running on our phone and we potentially might offer both and give the user choice.
Yeah, or we test lots of things to see what our options are. And so, yes, exactly.
So, yeah. So,
So there we go. Correction and an opportunity to play the breaking news bumper. Okay. I love it when it works out like
that. Good job, Zach.
Thank you, Zach. Okay, real quick, before we kind of head on out of the hardware section. I don't really have a whole lot to say about it yet, but this morning...
The ongoing drama of Jason's watch.
Yes. My Moto 360 is shattered, and so as a result, and did you know about this, Gina?
The strap broke.
But when it did, it didn't just break. It hulked. Yeah. It hulked out of the back of the watch, and it's all cracked and crazy.
Oh no! So, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, all I did was like get up, and I guess my muscles were too much for the watch. but it paves the way for my wrist to give a different watch a chance, and I have here. I don't know if we have the over the shoulder shot. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't.
We don't.
But I have here, right here. The Pebble Time. And so I literally took it off the charger this morning for the very first time on full charge. I'm going to play with the Pebble Time for, I just got a notification. I don't know if you saw that. For a couple of weeks and kind of compare it to wear because I'm very curious to know. Yeah. Like, I'm so used to wear now. I want to kind of see the difference. I can give you my less than 12 hours review, which is that, wow, it just kind of feels like a toy.
It's less than.
It's.
Right?
I don't know.
It's boyish. Like, it's sporty. It's super sporty, just looking wise.
Yeah, I
has no touchscreen.
I suppose it's sporty. It doesn't have a touchscreen, which I'm very used to. Mind you, I've only had it on for 12 hours, so I haven't really gotten used to it. There's four buttons, so three buttons. Yeah, I wish we had an over the shoulder, but there's three buttons right here, right? One that goes up, one that goes down, and then one that kind of selects. And then on the other side is kind of like a power button that allows you to kind of go backwards or whatever. So I'm kind of like learning how to do that kind of stuff. Yeah, don't worry about it. Learning how to do that kind of stuff, and it's gonna take me some time, I'm sure, to feel comfortable with that. But just the overall design of the watch, I don't know, it just kind of feels like a toy.
Yeah, and, well, I mean,
the display looks like a toy,
right? Well, but that's the thing, because it's a different type of device, the Moto 360 and all the other Android Wear and the Apple Watch are little mini computers in watch format. Mm-hmm. That is a different type of device. It is an e-ink, display device, that has some interactivity to it, but it is not as robust, and that's why it's got a cheaper price tag. So
yeah, oh, fair enough. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just as useful from a notification on your wrist standpoint. It's very good at notifying me that I have a new email or whatever, or a notification popped up. I get it on my wrist, and so I enjoy having that. That's one of the main things that I want out of a watch that I've grown accustomed to with Android Wear. But I just find kind of the button interface to be a little less than intuitive compared to what I'm used to with Android Wear. But I'm curious to kind of give it a shot.
You've been spoiled by Android Wear.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
I'd have a hard time with the buttons. But 7 days of battery life?
Oh, I mean, okay. Nice. So let me see.
Pros and cons. Pros and cons.
Let me see here.
There might be something. I mean, is it like sort of explicitly, intentionally 8-bitty kind of retro like? It looks like from the website, it is.
The display,
kind of cute about that. Just the screen, just like the way that stuff renders on the screen looks. I don't know.
Yes.
It could either be sort of charmingly retro.
It
or
kind of just celebrates its retro approach. And totally. Yeah. I almost get the feeling that I'm wearing a watch that I could have got when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like back in the 80s or something like that. And so I guess that's, there's a certain charm to that. Let's see here. Battery. Okay. So I took it off the charger this morning at 8, and I've been wearing it ever since. I've been getting notifications all day. Battery sits at, let me see if I can read that, 100%.
Oh my gosh.
So,
wow.
7 days of battery life is really
nice. So there's
that.
Nice.
And you could submerge it, kind of. So you can you can swim in the pool or take a shower.
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Up to 30 meters.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So,
Sync it and stuff. Is it?
What's
and you're getting everything. How's the app to sync it and stuff? You're getting all your calendar.
The app is all right. Yeah, actually, well, I don't have it.
Bluetooth?
I don't have it hooked up. I have it on my
Bluetooth. It's not Wi-Fi, right?
Bluetooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from a syncing standpoint and everything, and connecting through Bluetooth, I'm having no problems. So, yeah, I'm very curious. Design wise, feels kind of like a toy, but
and look wise, design wise, right now,
exactly. But it certainly has its pluses.
Yeah.
That battery life, that's like insane. And if all you really care about is notifications, and you don't want to have to charge it every day, then this might be a pretty good solution.
It's all the pros and cons. You get the long battery life, you get limited functionality. I mean, that's all, or different functionality.
So, yeah, different. Yeah. It's still a watch.
Yeah.
You can still tell time.
It's on your wrist.
Exactly.
It's red.
This is a screaming watch right here.
Yeah.
I kind of feel a little self-conscious wearing it. Check out my watch.
I want to know, where is Swatch in all of the smartwatch world? Because they own the word Swatch. Why aren't they making smartwatches? I would so buy a Swatch smartwatch. Swatch watch.
I'd be first in line. I was a big Swatch fan.
And I'm dating myself by talking about Swatch.
Where Forbes.com says that
Swatch smartwatch.
Swatch's first smartwatch, reportedly based on Swatch Touch, is on course for August.
Cool. All right.
Launching in Switzerland and one other place.
Swatch Touch.
With NFC payments.
When I was a kid, the Swatch, the black band with the white face with the black X, was a big hit with all the straight edge kids. That was a very cool watch to have. It was. So.
Oh, Swatch. All right. Let's take a break. Thank the second sponsor of today's episode. That would be LegalZoom. I've been using LegalZoom for years, since before I even worked at Twit. So I'm a big fan. And you should check out LegalZoom because it's super, super handy stuff for, both your personal life as well as your business life. There's a ton of reasons that smart people trust LegalZoom. LegalZoom can help you incorporate or form an LLC to start your business if you're thinking about starting one. Or if you're thinking about forming a nonprofit, they can help you with that. Register your trademark to protect your products or your services. You can apply for a patent to secure that invention that you have. Over the past decade, more than a million people, just like you, have started with LegalZoom. Did you know that LegalZoom is your first stop when you need advice from an attorney? You can actually get advice from an attorney and connect to them through LegalZoom. LegalZoom's not a law firm, so instead they built a network of independent attorneys in most states to provide legal advice and other totally useful services to help you run your business. Whether you need a contract reviewed or advice on whether you should incorporate or form an LLC, whatever your legal question is, you can start with LegalZoom. They provide complete transparency with upfront pricing, customer reviews, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Make the smart choice for your business. Add LegalZoom.com today. And don't forget to enter, and this is important, AAA at checkout, and you'll save even more. That's LegalZoom.com, promo code AAA. Legal help is here. And we thank LegalZoom for their support of this show. All right. It's time to check out some apps.
All right, so earlier in the show, we talked about the slightly clickbaity headline of Google launches an app for ride sharing called
yes.
Ride With.
Oh, and everybody's like, okay, me.
So Google's going to compete with Uber and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
No, stop.
All right, first off, Google Ventures is a big investor in Uber, so I really don't – that's why you can call an Uber from Google Maps and things like that. So let's keep that in mind. Google bought Waze. We all know that Google bought Waze. Waze is still operating of its own volition. Waze is also sending data to Google Maps. That's synergy, folks. So Waze has developed a carpool ride-sharing app called Ride With. So unlike Uber, where you call a taxi or a black car or whatever mode of transportation, you know, in Cannes they had a Uber helicopter.
What?
Yeah, in Cannes, really? For the Cannes Film Festival. Yeah, that was the thing. Anyway, but so unlike Uber, it's purely meant for carpooling, meaning that a rider can only score a ride with a driver that is traveling that route to and from work, and drivers can only give two rides each day, one to work and one from work, and then drivers will be paid for their gasoline usage and wear and tear in the vehicle. And before you get all excited and want to sign up, they rolled this out in Israel. So right now it's only for use in Israel. So if you're in Israel
only. Okay.
Yeah, so if you're in Israel and you're looking for a carpool, Ride With by Waze could be a good option for you.
But this is a cool idea.
It's a very cool thing. Yeah, I mean, it's a great – I mean, it's environmentally sound. And people – I mean, it was funny because just a couple of weeks ago I was in New York and I was driving down the LIE and I saw one of those park and ride signs. And I guess they have these parking lots that they have by the expressway where you can meet people for carpools and leave your car there and get a ride or whatever. And I was like, wow, does anybody actually still use those? And I don't think they do. But now this could be the 21st century kind of carpool kind of solution, which carpooling is great because I used to carpool to work when I drive. And it's a great way to save on gas and save on, you know, emissions.
You only pay for the mileage driven, and that cost is kind of calculated
by the app. Yeah, exactly. So.
So it's an interesting take on kind of commuter sharing.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder why Israel. Is Waze based in Israel?
That's a good
question.
I wonder
why that was the...
Yeah.
But you're right. That was a big tease.
It's a big tease. A big tease.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
He's owning it.
Gotta get you to stay in there until the app section.
Gotta, you know? What? Google's competing with Uber? What? It's just,
I didn't say that. I did not say it that way. Actually, I think I said ride sharing. That's what it is, right?
The pilot began in Tel Aviv. I don't know why.
Yeah. Neither do I.
Okay. Waze is based in Israel, according to Scooter X in the chat room. So there you go.
Right. So there you go. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well,
yeah,
that's
a big app for Waze to launch. You know, for it to be, it's clearly a Waze app and not necessarily a Google app.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Fine.
It's Ride With is an experiment in the Tel Aviv area that doesn't compete with Uber. It's a platform built to enable local drivers to help each other during busy commute hours, a spokesman for Google said. So there you go.
Oh, the Google spokesman says doesn't compete with Uber. Wow. Uber's, that's...
Yep.
Oh, well,
it's also interesting because in the Wall Street Journal article about it, it says, to avoid regulatory hurdles such as the ones facing Uber, Waze will limit drivers' ability to generate income by connecting them only with passengers who wish to join the route they take to work and back.
Right.
So you're not hiring someone to drive you. Exactly. I'm going this way anyway. It's basically legal hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm. It's legal hitchhiking, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. Interesting.
Yeah, cool stuff.
Very cool.
So I didn't know that this hadn't already released officially, but I guess it hadn't, Gina.
Yeah, I guess not. So BlueStax lets you use any Android app on your Mac. The BlueStax Player is desktop Android emulator. It's been limited to PC up until now, actually. So this is the new thing. With the release of the official version, the Mac app is available now. The alpha release first hit in 2012. We've definitely talked about BlueStax here on the show. Mm-hmm. But this is a free download for Mac, and you know there are other ways to do this. You can use the Archon. Is it Archon or Archon?
I think it's Archon
the
runtime
for,
yeah.
Archon runtime for Chrome. But this is a desktop app, Mac app. I installed it and I started to run it, and it prompted me for my Google credentials, and I saw something shiny, and I got distracted, and it was on my other computer, so I didn't actually wind up getting an Android app fully running. But it appeared to be, it appeared to look like it was about to work. I was wondering how it connected to the Play Store, but you sign in with your Google account, and it looks like you can download any app and run it. So yeah, it looks pretty neat, particularly for gaming. If you want to play Android game on your desktop and use your keyboard, your mouse, rather than touchscreen, well, looks like it can be fun.
Cool. That's very cool.
Very neat. And also, and I think this is important to...
filed under finally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very good way to put it. Instagram is finally updating its image upload capabilities. So for the longest time, and I mean, Instagram, it's all about images. Yet they've only allowed you to upload, what, 640 by 640?
Yep.
That's actually been one of the reasons why I don't like uploading to Instagram, because I'm like, if I'm going to want to save this and have it for later, like I don't want a little thumbnail image, you know, as a result. Anyways, they've upped it to 1080 by 1080. So they've upped it to a higher res, and an Android app update, which I think I just got, is coming out, should enable the new higher res uploads.
Speaking of updates earlier, they just literally just updated the app. And so now you can do it.
Yeah. Mm. Although man, Instagram is not my routine.
Not your jam?
It's not. Well, I like it. Yeah. It's just not my routine. It's not. Yeah. I have to like actually think about why am I putting a photo on Instagram versus
you're thinking too much.
These other places.
Thinking too much.
Yeah, you're thinking too much.
Think of all the meals you miss sharing with me and Gina.
All you guys the meals. Sharing meals at each other?
Gina and I share a lot of meals.
I could make it my meal sharing place.
There's a subtle little bit of competition going on every couple of weeks to get the other person to drool over what they're eating. So.
It's true. I go out of my way to take particularly sumptuous photos of Hot Heroes and fried chicken because Ron really eats well. Let's just say that.
Ron does okay.
I do all right.
He does okay.
My mother raised me well.
I'm assuming these are meals that you buy out at restaurants and not meals that you're making at home.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's totally like the food. Yeah, a lot of food. Food and kid pictures. That's basically what I use it for.
Okay.
And I post food and funny signs.
But I feel like Instagram is a wasteland for kid pictures because none of the people that care about my kids.
I'll tell you what it's a wasteland for. It's a wasteland for cats and dogs. No offense to anybody with the cats and the dogs, no stuff like that, but I'm not a cat or dog person. Uh-huh. So I wish I had a filter to not show me those photos because enough.
No pets. No kittens. No kittens.
I'm okay with the kids. The kids are cute. I like the kids. They're cuddly. The cat. Oh, great. Your cat's on the TV again. Like
That black cat looks like that black cat.
Yeah, exactly.
Except it's upside down. Right, I'm so cute.
Slightly
For private, I use my private account for kid pictures. Like it's good to get the six people in the family who care.
Yeah, you can limit it. Yeah, you know, we don't need to have everything we do in the public eye, Jason.
No, hey,
I know we're trained to.
No, I keep my Facebook account is locked to friends only.
Oh yeah,
and I get a lot of requests, and I never accept them. And I'm sorry if you've requested and I don't accept you, but that's just because I post all my family and friends stuff there.
Yeah.
But Instagram, I only end up using Instagram when I know I'm about to take a picture that might have any sort of artistic quality to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely a pressure for the pictures to look nice on Instagram. There's definitely an artsy thing to it. Yeah,
it's not like I haven't posted there. So I guess if I was to look at my roll. It would be 20 or 30 photos, but they were 20 or 30 photos that I was like, okay, this is going to look good. So I guess in that regard, it gets used. I just don't use it very often. Maybe I just don't have many reasons to take artistic photos in my life. I don't know.
I post screenshots.
That's an interesting way to do it, although we don't have it overshot.
I posted this to Google Plus too. You see, my problem is that I wish Instagram cross-posted to Google Plus, because I use Instagram as a publishing platform to publish to Twitter, to Facebook, and then I would like to do all the one, you know, but the other day, scroll down, Zach, scroll down. See, this was at the baseball game. I was listening to records. I was playing pinball.
Yeah, there's barbecue.
Barbecue sign. That last bus home. So I was out in San Francisco, and admittedly, it was late. It was 3 a.m. or 2:30, and Google Plus, I check Google Plus, and it goes, last bus home in 55 minutes.
So oh my goodness.
I've never gotten that alert before. I was very concerned. So,
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So that's scary.
Yeah, right? That's a scary one. So
it's not a fun one.
Okay.
All right.
We got an email. Tade writes in to correct us from last week in our episode with Ron Amadeo when he was on. Tade says, longtime lurker, but I just listened to episode 220 where you guys are talking about fitness apps being unreliable and unscientific. Specifically, Ron Amadeo mentioned that there's no way to automatically measure a gym workout without resorting to a spreadsheet or writing stuff down. Well, there is actually. There's that A word that podcast hosts love.
Yes.
Actually. There's an app called VemoFit that works with Android Wear, which you can run on your watch while you work out. It detects the exercises you do best with repetitive weight motions, records the reps quite accurately, and you can speak a name for the exercise that you just used the weights with for it. It's been fairly accurate for me. It also provides the calories burned after every set, and it's just kind of a neat way to easily track a workout. Just thought I'd let you know. Smiley face. Aww. So VemoFitWear, what is it? VemoFitWear Fitness Personal Trainer, and it runs with Android Wear and runs with your phone. And we were talking about it. We were being kind of flip with it, but I was pretty sure that there's stuff out there that are using the accelerometer both in your phone and also the tech in the watches to detect movement and things like that and count them. Because specifically when you're lifting, if you're lifting weights, that's a repetitive motion that that it can detect and use.
It's cool. So, I hadn't heard about this. I'm very. I wish my Moto 360 wasn't.
Look at that pose. You see that? That's danger to that watch. That's what
could destroy.
Yeah, but that's a Samsung Moto 360. Wear Fit, though.
Yeah, but I have that one too, and it broke.
It broke right now.
I apparently am like tech destroyer.
Yeah,
you are the
Android Wear destroyer.
I used to be really good with technology.
Yeah, this is a bad year.
I'm just destroying technology left, right, and center.
So, all right, cool.
I'm sorry, technology. I apologize.
Well, thank you, Tade, for letting us know about that. We'll pass it along to Ron so he could check it out. And before we get into the arena, we want to thank our last sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Gazelle, the fine folks at Gazelle, where you could buy certified pre-owned Samsung Galaxy phones and accessories directly from Gazelle. If you've lost or broken your phone, a certified pre-owned device is a great way to buy a low-cost replacement device. Gazelle still offers great deals or trade-ins for your old device. If you visit gazelle.com, you can see what devices are available from Gazelle on a certified pre-owned condition basis. Benefits of buying a certified pre-owned device from Gazelle are that they're available in two conditions. They're certified like new and certified good. Certified good devices show some gentle signs of wear, but offer consumers who want to save a little extra money a great device at a great price. All devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to ensure that they're fully functional, and certified pre-owned devices are backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So if you want to upgrade your device or pick up a new device, Gazelle is the place to go to. Some benefits of trading in your device to Gazelle is that you get paid in cash. Payment is fast within a few days of your item being received. It's risk-free. Gazelle will also wipe your data for free. So therefore, it's trustworthy. And Gazelle has paid nearly $175 million to over 1 million customers. It's easy. Free shipping. Most items qualify for a free box. They got a fast process. No listing hassles. And it's just a great option for you if you need to replace or you want to upgrade your phone or just try something new. Sometimes I feel like trying something new.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am considering of switching to another phone just to try it, just to try something different. So maybe I'll go look at Gazelle.
About time.
Available. Yeah. It's been almost 2 years since I've been at October 2013.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. It's time for me to go to gazelle.com. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to find out what my Android device is worth. Take a minute, go to gazelle.com to find out today, and we thank them for their support.
Excellent. Love Gazelle.
Yeah.
Sell your device there. All right. Cool. Hey, let's battle. You want to battle?
Let's do it.
Let's get a little rough and tumble. Yeah. Okay. Arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Oh, this is a close
down,
one.
Down to the wire.
This is a close one.
This one is...
Yeah, well, you can enjoy that bumper however many times you want to come back to the show, just say.
Although I got to tell you, I feel stressed by the there's a lot of pressure. I was like, I need a nap tonight.
Adrenaline. Wow, so last week's really has been all over the place. It was neck and neck all week.
I pulled ahead. Medium had pulled ahead for a little bit, and then Proton Pulse bridged the gap, and then Proton Pulse was ahead. And so now currently, as far as I'm looking at it, Proton Pulse has 36% of the vote, 192 votes.
You have to be logged in order for it to do it, Zach.
So Proton's got 36%, 192 votes. Cloud Player's got 27% with 143 votes. And Medium's got 37% with 194 votes.
192
votes separated.
What? Seriously? Came down to two votes.
Wow. Wait, let me log in with my other Google account here.
No, I will admit I posted the Google Plus earlier reminding everybody to make sure they vote.
So did I. I saw yours. So I was like, all right, cool. We're going to play that game. Let's do it. So
just because it was so close.
It was back and forth. Yeah. And so either one of us could have won. Medium apparently wins. Okay, fine.
I'll take the win.
Although Proton Pulse is a pretty darn awesome VR game.
It was a cardboard app where it was Gina, I don't know if you watched the show or not, but it was like Breakout, but with the Google cardboard. So wherever you look, that's where the thing that pushed the ball.
And it was all 3D. Was cool. You're looking up the tunnel of the Breakout area. Yeah, it was really cool. But, you know, not cool enough to win, apparently.
And then there's long reads on I love Medium.
Yes, exactly. There's instant VR gratification, and then there's reading a really, really, really long post.
Well, they'll tell you how long the read is.
17,000 word think piece.
8-minute read. 4-minute read.
Sure. I'll have time for that some other time.
It's true.
Okay, so I guess I'm the loser. Loser that's here. So I'm going to show off an app. And so this launched today. It's called Hooks. And basically what it is it's all about getting alerts for everything. Well, the app is called Hooks, alerts for everything. So there it is in the name. But basically what it means, it's been on iOS for a little while, so I think that they've kind of populated the app with a lot of different hooks through here. But basically I can tap the plus here, and I can create an alert, and I will be notified whenever any of these conditions happen. I will say it's kind of similar to what you get in something like Push Bullet Channels.
Yep.
But they Hooks actually offers more sources, as far as I can tell. Sports, concerts, video games, weather, TV shows, lottery results, allergy alerts, meetups, films, restaurants, just a ton of different sources. So you can kind of look through, right? So like if you have a TV show that you like, go in here. Let's set up an alert. Let's see here. I did it. Oh, there it is. Did it on the other phone. I didn't do it on here. Let's see here. What should I do? Mr. Robot.
Watch it.
Okay, so Mr. Robot, search, selected, and now, you know, you can kind of set, like, what do you want to happen? When do you want it to alert you? Do you want it to be a day before? Do you want it to be night of? 1 hour before it's supposed to go live? Whatever. Create the alert. Boom. Done. And you basically go through all of these different categories. You can do it by keyword. You can, you know, it's split out into sections. If you have a favorite team that you want to follow, you can do this. So now, yes, some of this stuff is duplicated in other things like Google Now and whatever. But, I mean, that's all that this is dedicated to. It's dedicated to finding tens or hundreds or thousands of different things that you want to be notified. And I'm telling you right now, don't do thousands of notifications. That's really, really messy. But you could.
You could, yeah.
If you really, really wanted to. Website is down. Put your website in there. And then when it's down, you get notified.
Well, hopefully you never get notified.
Yeah, hopefully you never do. But if it happens, you know right away. Currency exchange, video games by score, an album is released by your favorite band. Just all sorts of stuff here. And they're adding more every day. They say you can search over 1 million alerts. You can create custom alerts, choose more than 100 channels. And I don't know, it's just kind of a cool way to kind of keep yourself notified on the things that are really important to you. It's kind of putting your notification pane to work and kind of empowering your notification pane in specific ways. And, you know, when that happens, you'll get a notification and you can act on it in however you choose. So a Tarantino new film. I want to know about that. Ooh. So next time Tarantino has a new film that's announced, I'll get a notification.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff. Just released today for Android anyways. That's Hooks, Alerts for Everything. And that is free. Check it out. All right. Gina, I have your app installed. Go ahead and talk about it. I'll show it off as best as I can.
So my app is called IA Writer. I'm a little bit of a, you probably know this about me, I'm a little bit of a sucker for anything that involves sort of plain text. And this is one of these sort of minimalist, distraction-free text editors. So if you're a writer, particularly if you're a web writer, this is a really nice, stripped-down, minimalist writing app. This is actually, IA Writer started on iOS and OS X. And actually, these guys, it's funny, this development team was so pro-app and they just ported this app to Android, and they said, you know, the Android development was a lot easier than we thought it would be. The fragmentation issue isn't an issue. But IA Writer has a lot of features it does not have on purpose. It doesn't have features to format your text or to, you know, fiddle around with anything. It is just typing, but it's got this one feature called focus mode that I think you just had on. Yeah, if you tap focus mode start, basically as you're writing, it only highlights the sentence that you're on. Once you start a new sentence, the rest of your text just kind of grays out. So it's got this like really cool like typewriter kind of effect. It's really great if if Medium won the arena last week. When you're writing your 17,000 word think piece on your Android device, you really want to do it in IA Writer because it is just kind of straightforward, just a text editor. Although it does sync to Dropbox and Google Drive, so you will have your documents up in the cloud, and it supports Markdown, which is kind of a nerdy markup language that makes it really, really simple to format your text as HTML without having to deal with any sort of HTML tags. So yeah, just really kind of simple, straightforward. You start a new document, go into focus mode, and just kind of do that brain dump. I use Keep to take notes and Evernote even to take notes. IA Writer is more like I'm composing an essay, or I'm fleshing out an idea, and I want to just kind of get it out of my head and not fiddle around. I just want to kind of get it out. And so that's what I really like about it. And it deals almost exclusively in just text files or Markdown files. And if you hit the back arrow next to the Documents menu, you can connect your Dropbox account or your Google Drive account sync there. It's a little expensive. It's $4.99. It's $5, which is a little bit extra for a text editor. This is kind of like the Moleskine of text editor apps. Think of it that way. It's one of these kind of the fancy writing apps that makes you feel like you're a professional writer. But it feels really good. And honestly, I've got a couple of essays in my head, and it may really help me kind of get them out because it felt like this really nice environment to write in. You can create new directories and add files. There you go.
Import ant.
Important. It is my important document.
My import ant.
Import ant.
So that is IA Writer, $4.99.
Nice.
Focus mode is
like one of those features that I never knew I needed.
That's
actually really handy. Yeah,
that's very clever.
It kind of fades everything else out so you can focus.
What's all about. Your current thought.
Mm-hmm. IA Writer, $4.99 in the Play Store. And up next we have Ron trying to defend his title.
Trying to. I think I got a good one here though.
All right,
I don't know. So this is the kind of app that gives you functionality that you wish was an Android, and I wouldn't be surprised if it gets in there one day after they see a third-party developer like this do it. But my app is called Inputting Plus, and it is actually it is an application that is currently in beta. But what it does and what it allows you to do is when you are typing in any app, all right, so I'm going to go into Keep, right? So here I've got a note in Keep, right, where it's saying, okay, this is a test of inputting, blah, blah. You see I've got this little bubble. This little blue bubble thing right here that I'm going to move around, right? So this is the interface into inputting. And what it allows you to do is you tap this, and it gives you the shade over your screen, gives you all the text that's currently active, and allows you to have universal undo and redo, so across any app, So if you do something and then, let's say you erase something and then you switch apps and you go back to it, you can hit undo and get it back. Gives you redo. It also gives you find and replace, which currently doesn't exist anywhere in Android. So I can find the word stuff and replace it with things, all right, and do that. And it didn't do it because I didn't match it, actually. So there you go, the lowercase. And now it deleted it. Oh, my God.
Oh, God, what do you do, though?
Well, this is great. You do undo. Look at that.
Oh, look at that.
It's almost like I planned it. And so then you go. So let's change the lowercase stuff. And now it highlights it and replace with things. Undo lowercase things.
Yeah, you want to match the case.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. All right. So things. There you go. Sorry. It's hard to type when you're doing a demo.
It's true.
If I had a a physical keyboard, this would be easier. So up here you can see the number of instances, and you can hit replace and replace and go back to editing.
Yeah,
and so there you go. Now they're all things. So it allows you to undo, allows you to redo, allows you to find and replace. But then also what it does is it keeps a – now this is where it gets a little wacky. It keeps a running clipboard of everything you've typed into any app. So as we can see earlier –
there's a couple of instances of Larry Wilcox in there.
I don't know why Larry Wilcox
would show up there.
Yeah, but so this could get you into some trouble. So you may not want this, depending if other people are looking at your phone or whatnot. But it's pretty neat though, because if you're ever like let's say you're writing your next book and you're using IA Writer and IA Writer crashes and it doesn't save what you wrote, mm-hmm. it's captured here in Inputting Plus. Which is pretty awesome. Neat. So if we go back to the app there, in the settings, a couple of things that you do need to make sure. You have to turn on the service totally, and enabling the service actually makes you go into your settings and to accessibility to enable the app and accessibility. So that's one thing. So you're telling Android that you want this app to be able to listen to everything that's going on, basically because you want to listen to all the text. You can turn off that timeline, the universal clipboard. So if I turn that off, it will stop capturing all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that might be good. You can also, considering it's a security thing, you can set a pin lock for the timeline.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Which is a great idea.
That's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. So that lets you do it for that. And so I'll just do the pin code right now. I'm going to change it later. So there you go.
I know your pin code.
You could also it's very specific. You could also set a limit for how long it will keep track. Only keep track of the last 10 minutes, last hour, you know, whatever you might want to do. You can change it to 1 day, 7 day, 30 days, infinite. You know, there you go. Not minutes, but days. This whole inputting timeline section, that's available. Currently the app is free, but the inputting timeline is an in-app purchase to go to the pro version. Mm-hmm. Currently right now they have a special. It's only 99 cents. And when the special's over, it's going to be $1.49. So it's not terribly expensive if you want that. You can turn off the inputting bubble or turn it on. You can change the size of it. So I can make it really big. You can change the color. You know, you can change the transparency level if you really want to be transparent. And you can turn on or off, undo and redo. So basically everything that it can do, you can turn on or off. You can also set a blacklist. So here are the apps I don't want you to capture the text for. So maybe text messaging or anything.
LastPass,
yeah, things like that. Mm. But actually, look at that. Keep watch on passwords. By default, it will ignore passwords. Mm. So if it detects that you're doing a password, it will keep on ignoring them unless you want to specifically turn it on. Mm-hmm. So really neat app. Really, you know, kind of a – here you can see the changes I made to the visual look of it. See, so there it changed to red, and I can change that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so the thing is, I don't love the button. I don't love the movable button. I wish it was more – if they made this into a keyboard or if they made this – they integrated it via the keyboard that'd be a little better. But it gives you way more control over what you're typing, depending if you're doing text messaging or doing a lot large-scale writing on a tablet. I often do when I'm on the road. I use my tablet to write notes and things like that. This is – you know, being able to have universal undo and redo and find and replace is amazing, much less the clipboard tracker. So there you go. Inputting Plus.
Excellent.
Nice.
I'm going to have to add that to my list. Figure out an arena episode around
that genre
of apps. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So we have three awesome apps in this week's arena. Is your favorite Hooks? Probably should be. Is your favorite IA Writer? Yeah, it's pretty good too, but Hooks is great. Is it Inputting Plus? Yeah, I liked Inputting Plus, but you know. You know, I never take advantage of this opportunity to to plug my own app. So this week I'm
you are very humble with your app selection.
AAAPoll.com/221 if you want to place your vote, and I highly encourage that you do. AAAPoll.com/221 It's not you know what? It's not gonna work for you because I haven't actually created it. Hold on 1 second. I am posting people who are watching the downloaded version will be able to get in here. Live people are scratching their heads, wondering when this is going to be done. They're wondering if I can do it faster. And what do you know? It is still working.
The suspense is killing us. This is just amazing.
I swear, when I hit update, it doesn't just update. It just swirls
on
me. Imagine
a material design spinner are going right now.
Yeah, there you go. It will work eventually, and then you can vote for inputting plus.
Yeah.
And then you'll be all set.
It's gonna work. The second we stop talking about it, that's usually
sure
how
is.
All right, so place your vote. Let us know how it is. Which app is your favorite? What is it? It's 221 is the episode.
221, right? It is.
All right, and is it going to work this time? It did. So now it works. So those of you watching live, go do it. And everyone else, AAAPoll.com/221, and that is it for this week's episode of All About Android. No. Oh boy!
Wow,
that was stressful.
Wow,
that was
That sound like I was just editing the show, but I got
we got a lot more to go.
I got to say goodbye to my peeps.
I don't want to.
I'm sorry. It's okay. I know you're programmed to hear that is it for this week's episode.
His finger was on the button. He was ready. He wasn't. He was gonna redeem himself from Android News.
He's like,
cue
cool.
the music. Let's go. Nope.
I appreciate you being on the ball, though, Gina. It's okay. Don't beat yourself up about it, Gina. What you got going on? I know you've got lots of cool stuff in the works.
Yeah, you know, so I've got a little ThinkUp plug. So my company and the product I work on, ThinkUp.com, we just added support for Instagram. So you can get Instagram insights. You can find out who's liking your photos and the photos that you liked a year ago today. And we also added a follower search. So, you know, if you want to know which one of your friends, you know, knows Python or loves Larry Wilcox or whatever, you can search your followers if you sign up for ThinkUp. It's ThinkUp.com. You sign up for a free trial. And yeah, that's pretty much all I got. For now,
you're now. I mean, that's a pretty big update to think up. I mean, it's like I was psyched to see Instagram get added. You were kind enough to add me a little early on, and so I got to see it work. It's pretty cool, and the user search. I mean, these are pretty big changes.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm hoping that like for folks like you guys at Twit, you know, like follower search. You know, if you're looking for some, you know, for guests of the show or doing research, you know, just finding people who. Yeah, worked at certain companies or have expertise in certain things or reporters or writers. I hope that kind of thing is helpful. So, yeah. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And how's your homepage looking these days?
Oh, man. I'm still working on getting you up there, Ron. I got to get one of your, like, amazing ravioli meals. Like, the, you know.
Yeah, right.
Someday I'll make it. Someday. That's how I know I'll make it when I'm on the ThinkUp homepage.
ThinkUp homepage.
Listen, I'm a ThinkUp power user. I'm on there every day. I get the email. I get everything. I love it.
Ah, so great.
So,
what about you, Ron?
All right. Well, when I'm not on ThinkUp, and you can go find me at ronxo.thinkup.com. You can go to about.me/ronxo, where you can find all my links to Google+ and to Instagram, the aforementioned Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff. And I mentioned it last week. I'll mention it again. Those of you who are comic book fans, and if you can't get enough of my the dulcet tones of my voice, you can tune into iFanboy on a weekly basis. Back on the show that I helped co-found with my brothers in arms, Josh and Connor. Yeah, and my second show back just came out earlier this week. And if you stay tuned to the very end, you'll see that we haven't lost the magic that we once had. It was very funny. It was a good time. So yeah, go to iFanboy.com, check that out. And doing that weekly. Every Sunday it comes out. So
nice. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Congrats.
Yay.
Zach, what about you?
Well, you can find me in the darkness, taking up the usual space of Cranky Hippo.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at EskimoZach and behind the TriCaster desk, making magic and mistakes at the same time. We do Android App Arena. I do This Week in Computer Hardware, This Week in Enterprise Tech, and other shows around here.
Making magic and mistakes. That really is the TriCaster in a nutshell right there.
Yep.
It's like on one hand, it's magical. On the other hand, you can really get yourself into a lot of trouble. But you do a great job, so I appreciate it. Thank you, Zach. As for me, you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Follow my music stuff at yellowgoldmusic.com. I do an Android show that Zach actually just mentioned called Android App Arena. You can find that at twit.tv/arena. Last week's episode was about the cloud. This week's episode is in the kitchen. A few apps that might be handy to you if you do cooking from time to time, which I do. But that is it for this week for this show. You can cue the music now. This is the right time. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Keep it short. Getting voicemails, but they're too long. AAA at twit.tv if you want to send us an email or a video mail. Find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Reddit at twitaa.reddit.com. Google Plus, there's a community there. Show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. And you can also find us at YouTube and episodes on iTunes. And you can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That is it for this week. We will see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
Boom! And right. Thank you, Girl Friday.
So, going back to the beginning of the show, is Larry Wilcox's personal assistant
I like the
watching?
First episode.
What would be the odds of Larry Wilcox's personal assistant watching the show? We started the show, and Girl Friday posted on Larry Wilcox's fan page.
Facebook page.
It's
a fan page. Okay.
A couple of things happened. First was while Jason was doing the ad reads, I looked up Larry Wilcox on Twitter. And found the second person he was following was, sure enough, Sue, Girl Friday.
Uh-huh.
And then moments after that, she said, I posted on Larry Wilcox's page on Facebook, and sure enough, that was there. So,
do you have a link for that you could drop in the
doc? You run a Chip's website? What is going on? Since 1995.
Okay.
Do you know Sue?
Yeah.
What? How does this happen?
Wait. What is happening? I can't see off.
So come. Do you mind coming on?
Patrick Delahanty, explain your story.
Hi.
I've been running a Chips website since 1995 at chips-tv.com.
What have we stumbled on? So you're like a Chips super fan.
I did go to the 30th anniversary reunion.
He went to the 30th anniversary reunion.
That was a different convention.
Okay.
In LA.
Wow.
And Patrick Delahanty does know Girl Friday, right?
Sue?
I came up to visit Twit the first time right after that convention.
Came up to visit Twit for the very first time after the Chips convention.
What is going on?
Wow.
Random mention of Chips pre-show turned into a lot of really...
How did we stumble into this?
coincidence.
I feel like Kevin Bacon, like this, I just so many connections.
It's like, yeah, it's very, very strange.
Like we're through the looking glass here, people. Zach, can you pull up... I linked it from my Twitter. Can you pull up the Facebook post?
Yep, I'll get it in just a second.
So we can show everybody? I'm sorry. Like you don't have anything else to do.
Oh, hilarious.
No, this is fantastic, too. I saw the Facebook post during the show. I was like, oh my
God. And, like,
God.
I was dying because I'm like, I can't talk about it during the show because the show doesn't care. Like, nobody cares in the show.
Look at that.
All right. All right. So we have the confirmation, if we didn't know already. Sue posted to her Facebook to say that... that it's very strange. She was watching All About Android, and we started talking about Larry and Eric. And Larry Wilcox has replied to say, "Okay, chime in on what?"
Wow!
So I think it's official. We can drop the mic now.
This is the most amazing thing I've ever been involved in.
Talk about the show on autopilot with Tom and.